Welcome back to NELP's Young Professional Network podcast, Grown in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Today's host of today's includes myself, Brett Lemke, RM Landscape, and our newest host. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes, Skyler Westergaard with Landcare. And we have a great guest, Brandon Shepherd. So welcome, Skyler. Welcome, Brandon. How are y'all?
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. Thank you.
And so Skyler has accepted a multi-year contract with us. Huge money to be a host. Yes. on this. I mean, your agent was tough, but we figured out how to negotiate our way through that. But just thrilled to have you here, Skyler. Your background, your enthusiasm, just I think the way you think is going to be a great part of our podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Brett. Glad to be here. Yes, I have a good agent. He was able to negotiate the cream filled eclairs. For that 10-year contract. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I guess we have to be a little tougher if that's really what you got. Dang it! All right. And so why don't you introduce Brandon for us?
Yeah, Brandon, we're glad to have you here today. Let me just introduce Brandon to our audience. Brandon Shepherd is a member of the Weedman sub franchisor team and operates multiple Weedman franchises across the Mid-Atlantic and the Gulf states. His journey with Weedman began in 2000 as part of the company's launch into the American market. Shepherd joined the Weedman team full-time in 2004 after receiving his Juris Doctorate from West Virginia University College of Law. Brandon is also president-elect of NALP and will be taking over at this year's Elevate Conference in Dallas. Glad to have you, Brandon. Is there anything that I missed that you want to add?
Not off the top of my head. I'm sure my mom would have a few things to throw in, like, you know, Eagle Scout and Honor Roll, but I think for the most part, you covered it.
Funny. Awesome. I did get that email. So let me read that email from his mother. It did not have any of that stuff. So it's not going to be repeated things, but
this is the moment where I would start to sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. We should do that.
Your mom sends an email and it's like, oh no.
I'm going to ask that going forward that all bios are not created by the person, but by like a spouse or a parent. And let's just see where this thing goes.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And luckily, we're not taking calls today, Brandon. So your mom probably won't be calling in to talk about you. Hey, Brandon, I'd love to just start our conversation today kind of asking you about your experience at this year's Renewal and Remembrance at Arlington. As president-elect, you got to kick off that event. And both you personally and NALP, our organization, has a long history of volunteering and community service. And I just love you to share a little bit about why volunteering and service is important to you, maybe why it's important to NALP, and specifically your experience at Renewal and Remembrance in our state's in our country's capital this last month.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I could spend the next hour just talking about Renewal and Remembrance. It's a really powerful event. And being, you know, given the honor of speaking and kind of, introducing our member volunteers to that day of service was really, you know, it's remarkable. I spoke to a number of my colleagues or predecessors who've given the same address. And, you know, the common theme was just the sense of gravity of that moment and that location in our nation's history. Being given just a small opportunity to play a little role in the preservation and beautification of that property it's just such a humbling opportunity and honor. I personally have participated in the event, I think, 23 times. I think the event's been going for 27. I missed 3 years. Renewal and Remembrance actually predates NALP as an organization, going back to the some of our ancestor organizations that launched it back in the late 90s. But it's almost, you almost want to break Renewal and Remembrance out of the traditional volunteer role, because it really is it's an opportunity to give back to those who've given to us. But it's a very opportunity to enjoy the rights and freedoms we do on a daily basis. And I think often we kind of take those for granted. other volunteer operation, opportunities are maybe a way to show to our community the good works and the benefit that the lawn care and the landscape industry can bring to, you know, quality of life, the environmental quality, the beauty of our communities. But renewal and remembrance is really, you know, to me, and I think to many of the attendees, it's really about giving back to those who gave to us.
And that organ, our sort of reach has expanded into some really cool parts of the DC neighborhoods and the lawn, and just, and hopefully that just sort of gives us continued opportunities for growth. The Arlington National Cemetery, beautiful grounds, doing really well. You know, how do we help other parts?
Yeah, Brett, that's a great point. Like, we've been able to expand the event to include a big part of the National Mall through our partnership with the Trust for the National Mall. And it's, you know, the beauty of that, kind of Brett, to your point, is that it's easier to expand because it's such a large area. Arlington National, because of the sensitivity of the site, we're often limited by the, you know, limited on the, in the number of volunteers and the projects that we can undertake, because it is a operating cemetery with burials multiple times every hour, every day. So it's a little tougher to navigate, where the National Mall, we're almost unrestricted on the projects we can take on.
Good yeah. Point. I heard from some of my colleagues that they were able to help on the mall at the, I believe, the Washington Monument. And, you know, I'm also proud to know that NALP has such a large number of volunteers that want to give back, as you said, to those who really created a life and a country that we enjoy in our generation. So it's great to hear. Yeah.
Well, I got the same opportunity you did years ago, Brandon. But the folks that made me feel the gravity told me that the minute before, and they showed me a photo of the president standing at that same backdrop. And then they go, here, go ahead, get up there. Good luck. Yeah. Right. And so they didn't give me much time to really. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't tell me after the fact. They said, no, do you know who else stood here? And I didn't really actually recognize that until that moment. And so very cool honor.
If there's a piece of advice I would give to any other individuals who have to speak there, don't research who has stood there before. Do it after.
Someone should have said that, but the wrong kind of friends. Well, and so now your journey with leading NALP begins, kicks off at Elevate, maybe a couple weeks away. What has been your experience within the NLP leadership to now? What is going through your mind these days?
You know, being on the board of directors of NALP, like, I really didn't know what to expect when I first joined the board, but it's been such a fantastic opportunity to interact with people who are really inspirational leaders in our industry, out of the box thinkers, like really creative minds, but individuals who are truly passionate about not just growing our industry, but growing the opportunities for everyone who's in it, whether it's building a more diverse and inclusive workforce, leadership, you know, beating a path forward that's really, you know, driving our industry towards a future that is more sustainable, both economically and environmentally for us. Every time I am in one of the board meetings, I feel like I am getting far more than I give, because it's such a collaborative, energized group of people who are all there for the exact same reason. It's not a resume line item or a box check for the next role. Those people who are in that room are there because they love the lawn care and landscape industry, and they want to make it just a little bit better every opportunity they can.
And you get to lead those folks now. What's driving you this year, or you hope to? I suppose everybody gets an opportunity as the NALP president to bring a little bit of something different, but sometimes it's just about keeping with the plan too. What's your strategy?
Wow. It's such a big freewheeling question. You know, I had a subset of this conversation with Pam Dooley, because, you know, she's, you know, the next person up after me. And the question was like, you know, what do you want your legacy to be for the association? And honestly, that question almost feels too big for me. I feel I'm tremendously humbled by the opportunity, not just to serve, but with the full knowledge that you were chosen by your peers to fill that role. I would be lying if I said there wasn't a little bit of imposter syndrome kicking around, but I am genuinely humbled and excited for the opportunity. If I have I think my broadest mandate is just to leave it a little better than I found it. There's been so much transition within the association, moving away from the GIE show, trying to craft a new vision that is member and value focused towards the industry, you know, our constituent members, as opposed to being perhaps a little too beholden to a single event, and really dialing in on what it is our members need to help them grow a stronger, more successful business, and by extension, a stronger future for the industry. Watching that transition happen and having a part in shaping the direction of the small part, I just want to continue building on that path towards a stronger financial future, a role of being true thought leaders for our industry, not just being the industry that does more of the same, but the one that is carving a better path for us forward, both in terms of building tools for our constituent members, but also carrying that message forward to the public, whether it's through advocacy on, you know, Capitol Hill, whether it's interacting with the media or the consuming public, helping to people understand more of the good work that we do every day. I'm not sure if that was a blanket mandate. That was a whole lot of do more of what we're doing, do it bigger, faster, and better.
Yeah, you hear it here first, folks. This is the groundbreaking stuff coming out of the association. We break the news. So
yeah, it's always fun to hear, you know, what get inside the head of the leaders of our organization. So we appreciate you sharing that. I'd love to follow up a little bit more. I in preparation for our discussion today, I was reading more about you the past few days, and in one of the articles,
you were interviewed in a couple days to do that. Like, we're talking a paragraph or two.
Yeah.
No, it was a Wikipedia page.
It was a quick Google.
Good, but it was mentioned in that article, what you just talked about, your passion for developing people. And you had said, I believe in that article, that one, some of your proudest moments in business is when you were able to build and transform the lives and the dreams of other people. And it sounds like you're saying that today. I'd love you to kind of talk about, maybe if we scale down a little bit, like in your business at Weedman, where you've seen that happen, and maybe some examples of that transforming lives. Because I think that's such a powerful concept that resonates with all of us. And I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that and how you've seen that again at Weedman under your leadership.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a lot to unpack there. We're a people company first. You know, you hear the whole people before profits as a euphemism. It's batted around all the time. But in at least in our operations, we believe very strongly in the power of not just investing in your people, but, you know, caring for them as individuals, recognizing that everyone's walked a different path to get to where they are. And we all have potential in us that we perhaps don't fully appreciate. We don't always fully appreciate helping individuals to recognize that there are companies out there that are interested in them as individuals, and helping them to develop their fullest potential is something that's, you know, is shared really across our leadership team. You know, being in the lawn and landscape industry, we don't always have the luxury of being able to go to market and find individuals who roll out of bed, whether coming out of high school or coming out of college, and going, landscaping, lawn care, that's where I want to be. And so we have to create and craft a stronger message that inspires them to you know, consider a future in our space. Maybe that is helping them, you know, better understand what a day in the life of, you know, lawn care, landscaping can look like. To that end, I think NCLC is a fantastic event for inspiring and harnessing kind of that energy, but it's only reaching kind of a subset of the broader market that we could potentially employ. But really representing yourself through the recruitment, to the interview, to the training process, that you're a company that gives more than just lip service to that concept of people first, invites people to bring a different part of themselves to work and to open themselves up to, you know, a type of training, coaching, and development that, you know, they have to show up for too. Like, you can't just say, here's a manual or here's a training protocol. If you want to get the most out of that type of a development process, they've got to be invested too. So trying to represent that type of an opportunity to the broader, you know, pool of potential employees has really been not just empowering, but rewarding. If that, you know, is kind of a, wasn't necessarily prepared to answer that question. So I hope I hit on some, hit on the answer you're looking for. Or somewhere approximating that.
Absolutely. I wasn't looking for a specific answer at all, but I think that what you said resonates for a lot of people. And, you know, in my experience, especially the younger generation, I think a lot are looking for more of the story, right? Of doing, not just going to work and collecting the paycheck for a 40 or 50 hour week, but yeah, getting paid and working hard, but also like being some part of something bigger. And I'm not sure if you would agree with that or not, but I get that sense that a lot of people have that.
There's a tremendous amount of data points confirming exactly that, especially with, you know, to your point, the new generation that are entering the workforce today are looking to make an impact or to be part of something that delivers value in a way that prior generations, you know, maybe haven't considered. And, or that hasn't been relevant to them. And maybe it was more of the like, okay, how much can I make at this job? I'm going to go to where the highest earning potential is. Well, now that value or that impact quotient of the work they're doing has a higher and higher value. And, helping, you know, that's an area of business leadership that you can't fake. There's no fake it till you make it. If you are bringing people in, representing to them that there's an impact or a value set that they're going to be delivering on their job, you cannot fake that, because the generation that's looking to have value and impact as a major component of their work, they have a huge filter for BS. And they, you know, if you're just giving lip service to it and they don't see the direct connection between what they're doing and the impact they sought to have, they're going to go elsewhere. You know, all of us have heard people say that, oh, the generation today doesn't want to work. Now, I'll be honest, every generation since time immemorial has heard that. I was literally sitting in a meeting with my dad probably 5 or 6 years ago. I think it was shortly before COVID. And, you know, my dad just turned 70 last year. We're sitting there, there was a guest speaker up in front of the room who was lamenting how kids these days really don't want to work. My dad leaned back in his chair and he's like, some SOB said that about my class when I was, you know, when I had just been hired into my first job. So yeah, we've heard that forever. But one point I would just like to point on, the like, kids these days don't want to work or aren't really, you know, willing to put in the effort or do anything. It's really important to remember that kids these days were the ones who've been putting on the uniform and going abroad to fight for our country for the last 20 years. So saying that they're not willing to roll out of bed, roll up their sleeves, do the hard work, I will call bullshit on that. Use my technical French. But it's just a important little reminder that they are willing to stand up and work and stand behind values and hard work and principles.
So how do you bring that to through your organization? What is it that, what's your value proposition or how do you embrace that conversation? It's a struggle, I think, a lot when we get into sometimes the type of work we do to just the levels of comfort each, you know, business owner has with how to, you know, sort of recruit that kind of folks. But what's been your strategy for that?
You know, part of it is recruiting it, but you've got to live it at every step. You know, I think it is critical that as a leader and as a manager, that you're bringing empathy to the work, you know, to your workplace every single day. Because empathy is a big part of understanding the values they want to give and get from their employment. And so that has to, setting that tone starts at the top, but it has to cascade all the way down through the entire workforce. Everybody has to believe in that same culture and value proposition that you do care for your colleague, your coworker, your customer. And it's got to be a value set across the entire company.
Yeah, Skyler, what is your all strategy been for that? I mean, I know that's a big teaching part, and you know, learn how you read and continuously learn. But so, how are you all teaching that empathy piece?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have a great answer for that. I agree with Brandon that it starts at the top, and bringing people in who have that character, I think, is really, really important. I think it's actually really difficult to teach empathy and care. I think you can model it. I think you can coach people in maybe actions or actions that maybe, or language that they're using that maybe opposing that culture. But, you know, I think that recruiting and finding the people, I think, is really the driver for that. And then I would also add, in my experience, I think creating the culture that once you have those people in the door, that they want to stay, that it's a nurturing environment for those type of people. Because if it isn't, you bring them in and they, as Brandon said, they'll sense that it's not really there and may want to go find it somewhere else. So bring them in and then keep them.
No, I mean, Skyler, I will say your organization, Landcare, is a great example of how a company can build that type of culture at scale. A lot of individuals and operators can do it on a limited, you know, in one location, two locations, but to do it at scope and scale across a multitude of states and locations, really complicated. It's not easy, and you have to do it on purpose. I think you also touched on, and P.S., Mike Bogan is responsible for a tremendous amount of my value-driven reading list. So we've fired books back and forth to each other, you know, a couple times, but he's definitely, you know, we talk about, you know, walking the walk and actually believing in it. Mike is fully invested in that type of leadership and development. But you mentioned a very important point, that it starts with recruiting. If you want, you need to be hiring people who are looking for that type of environment to operate in. If you're, you know, you can get a sense during the recruiting process whether someone's an all-out mercenary and they're interested in, how do I get mine every day? And in the right application, that can be, they can be an asset to a team. But you'll have indicators during the recruiting through onboarding process to identify who the people are likely to fit culturally in the type of team you're looking to develop. You know, it's very much a hire on attitude as opposed to hire on a resume and a skill set. Because, you know, all a resume does is tell you what they've done before and what they want you to see. It's not necessarily a representation of what their, you know, skill set and ability is. One of our most important executives in our organization went to school to be a priest, majored in history, and literally was studying to be a priest. Really cool story. Met his wife the first day of school at the IT help desk. So that whole priest thing went sideways, but absolutely no background in lawn care, no background in sales, but had the right inclination, had the right aptitude and desire to learn and win. Our current, his role just changed, outbound salesperson, is not even, is responsible for a multi-million-dollar sales office in Winchester, and he can't even buy beer yet. But he has all the necessary value and aptitude, and we put him into that leadership role because he checks all the boxes. Plenty of people say, oh, but the age box, he's not old enough. What does that mean?
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Well, I'll say, I think, you know, Scott and I will probably both say, you know, those experiences when you find that person with the, just aligns with you, regardless of the roads that you'll, the bumps in the roads where they're not technically there, they just didn't have a lot of experience. Those things go, you overcome them in a hot second, and you're moving way, way faster than that of that person that, where that alignment is wrong, but they have all this perceived experience, all that experience actually even just sort of slides away and erodes because they're not aligned. And so it does start with that one or two individuals. If you can make the changes, make them quickly, you know, we're experiencing both sides of that where we're really going fast with some and we're getting pulled behind by others. And we have those conversations and we, all of us are struggling with those. It's just, got to break through that. And naturally, eventually, you know, things compound, you know, like minds get that. So when you want to be on the positive end of, you know, hiring, recruiting like minds versus the other side. Yeah. So Scott, what was your thoughts there?
Yeah. Sorry for interrupting you, Brett there. Yeah, I agree. You know, you talked about Landcare being able to do that. At the same time, you know, culture is local. So even with a bigger organization such as Landcare, it comes down to that branch team, those four or five or six or seven people that you work with every day. And so we are, as you said, big readers here at Landcare. And I'm sure the three of us today are also. One of the things that we've been working on as far as hiring people that have that characteristic, you said, Brandon, like it's not all about just what's on the resume, right? Mm-hmm. There's some things that are hard to measure on a resume. So we use these six hospitality quotient characteristics that you might have heard of from Danny Myers. He talks about them in his interviews and in his book, Setting the Table. So I have them pulled up. I'll just share them with our audience here and recommend that people go do a little bit more research on these six hospitality quotients and consider building in interview questions that look for these. So they are kindness and optimism, intellectual curiosity, work ethic, empathy. You talked about that one. Self-awareness and integrity. So the question and challenge for us is, how do we coach our branch managers to look for those things when they're interviewing? So again, six hospitality quotient characteristics from Danny Meyer. There's a little plug for his work.
God, I would have held the book up, but I just realized it and winning on purpose are what are holding my laptop at the level it's at. So
yeah, mine's just out of reach on my bookshelf, so I couldn't hold it up either, but yeah.
Hey, episode one, Scott, we get Skyler on and he's just pulling the real good nuggets for our listeners. I'm just, you know, we made a good find. That those eclairs went really far. And I love that kind of sharing, right? You need to be that curiosity, and it's going to be through books. It's going to be through networking. It's just even these conversations. And if you're not finding these little nuggets that are out there and then using them, right? I always appreciate how far Landcare goes with, you know, you read something, but then it's integrated and it's discussed and it goes further than just, wasn't that a nice read? And okay, what's the next one kind of piece?
If we're talking about things to throw on the reading list, I would add to Danny Meyer's book, Unreasonable Hospitality by one of actually Meyer's acolytes, 11 Madison Park. And I know the book's about to go on the screen right now. And then Winning on Purpose, which is about the Net Promoter Score. And its development at Bain and Company out of Boston by Fred Reichheld. Mm-hmm. You marry those two principles together of having, you know, a culture that's built on values, caring for each other, having a very customer-centric approach, understanding the quality of the work you're doing and how the customer experiences it is one of the most important metrics of overall business health. You have to come at both of those objectives concurrently, right? You need to have people who are going to care about the customer, but you've got to care about them if you want them to care about the customer. So you can't divorce those two principles. I would also, you know, we're talking about the importance of getting beyond the resume at times. It is important for, you know, hiring your right culture, but it's also a tremendously important tool for building diversity. one of the biggest obstacles our industry has. I mean, there are big segments of our industry that are nowhere approaching diverse, especially at the management and ownership of a lot of our companies. And a lot of people, I think, struggle to recruit beyond the resume when it comes to management and leadership positions. I think because their resume is a safety. Oh, well, you know, they had a good resume. They had all the right preceding jobs, the right education. So it's a point of safety to hire based on the four corners of that paper and not necessarily lean in enough in the process to vet some of their decision-making, their empathy, their you know, sense of self and their objectivity and like, who am I as a person? Am I, how do I respond to feedback and coaching, like getting to that value set and building diversity and building a powerful culture, both require work beyond the four corners of a document. You need to be willing to hire someone who maybe doesn't have the right experience. They didn't get the opportunities to lead teams or go to those schools. They may have all the attributes and ability, but you've got to do the work to find it. Ask the right questions, take the time to get it right, and don't dismiss people out of hand because they don't have the right box checks. And I will say that's also very important for people coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds or different educational backgrounds. I venture to bet that there are a tremendous number of real performers in our industry, in our businesses today, who wouldn't put their name forward for a management or a leadership position because they feel self-conscious about their education or maybe their background and wouldn't self-select and say, hey, you know, Brett, Skyler, I'd like to be considered for this role or opportunity. They've got all the other pieces of the puzzle, but they're not self-selecting, you know, for that opportunity because they don't think they check the boxes. And all that, that we can solve so many of those problems by being brave and being willing to put the work in as leaders to find those, you know, those outside of the box applicants or members of our team who really deserve, you know, have earned the opportunity to be considered.
So do you, so who in your, Brandon, your world takes on that responsibility? And I think often about, you know, small, mid-sized businesses, and even Skyler jumping on this too, it's like, you know, at the local branch level, how do you go about doing that? When oftentimes, I think so many of us are locked into, we have an operations challenge. We need to put people in those trucks to get work performed versus promoting the managers, slowing it down, or just doing it right. So how do you all approach that? How would you consider approaching that at that smaller scale?
Everybody's got to have a stake in helping to, you know, if you've built a team, let me back up a second, where people believe that business goals and their personal goals are inextricably linked, that they truly believe that a business win is a personal win. It's easy to culture people to understand, or sorry, not easy, it's easier for them to understand the value and that they have a responsibility in helping to identify the next person up. Understand that they can't grow out of their role until somebody is ready to fill either some of their shoes. So you can take some of that burden off of a hiring manager or off of the traditional leadership team if everyone from the technician up understands they have a stake in either rising to grab the next opportunity or identifying people who are maybe demonstrating the values and the culture of who we are in a way that, you know, suggests that they may have a broader, bigger future in your operation. But if you're doing things right, your team leads, your technicians, your salespeople have a similar sense of investment that winning, that the business growing and expanding is building opportunity for them, and that they should never be threatened by developing someone who might advance, you know, skip over them in the org chart, which is a very real problem in a lot, you know, in work, in every work. Sure. There are perennially managers who are afraid of having a talent on their team who could eclipse them.
Classic stuff. And I like that, where if you hire well and they take that serious, that new team member is ready to say, you know, what is it going to take for me to help you then, you know, then you've got attitude really just sort of covered really well there. It's when they, it's a use, you know, use each other relationship, then, you know, destined for a lot of gaps.
You know, Brett, you mentioned something else that I think is important to mention or to go back to, the tension of getting work done. We're all in a seasonal, you know, universe. We deal with seasonal fluctuation in the workload and the workforce. We all deal with the tension of getting the need to get stuff done and how it can impact the decisions we make when it comes to our employees. We have all had employees that should have been let go and helped to find the right job for them a whole lot sooner than when we actually let them go. We've kept them because we just needed work to get done. But if you're going to invest the time to build a strong, enduring, empowered culture, you've got to get rid of cultural cancers faster. You know, the consequence of everybody having to do a few more jobs every day to stay on schedule is an easier sell if you're going to stand up for the people who are doing things right. It's always, and I know there's a threshold where you just, you know, you have to take anyone with a, you know, a pulse and a driving license. We've all struggled with that, but it is, there's a real imperative on leadership to get rid of outliers that are corrosive to culture. There will always be people on the team who maybe aren't top performers when it comes to getting the work done, but they are fully bought in and doing the work right and have the right values and respect for the customers and colleagues. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who are actually corrosive to your employee and customer culture. They've got to go fast. The whole like hire slow, fire fast.
An interesting dichotomy is that sometimes those cancerous characters are at times the good performers, but they're having a negative effect on the business. And, you know, I hear in your words the past few minutes, you know, this challenge, but tremendous and exciting opportunity for leaders to look for, to coach, mentor, and grow people. And to when I say look for, I mean proactively look for who are those people that may not be raising their hand, but need to be considered. And in the books that we talked about earlier, Setting the Table and Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Goddard, they talk about some really cool stories with situations that you just shared. So it is a challenge, but again, an exciting opportunity for leaders to grow people.
You know, it's ironic that we keep coming back to this hospitality theme, because, you know, elite kitchens have been known for the whole work your way up architecture forever. Yet oftentimes, you know, so that means you're hiring somebody to come in and wash dishes who may have a great resume or a lot of aptitude, instead of hiring somebody who's just capable of washing dishes. And I think sometimes we forget that when you're recruiting, that you can hire somebody who maybe has a resume that's, well, they're wildly overqualified to cut grass, mulch flower beds, or, you know, apply fertilizer and weed control. But if we're going to be building a pipeline of talent that we can pick from to advance, you better be hiring people who are capable of a lot more than the job you're hiring them to do, and not be afraid to hire. Because I think classically what happens, we're like, oh, they're overqualified, I'm going to have to train them and they're going to leave in 5 minutes and go do something else. Maybe. But you could hire somebody who's perfectly qualified and that exact same thing happened anyway. So aren't you better off hiring a greater level of talent and, you know, laying out the path of opportunity that's in front of them, of how they can build their skill set and actually pick a workplace that they can make their home for their entire career, literally grow their own opportunity? And that process begins at the interview. It's from the recruiting on. But we have to be willing to hire beyond necessarily the basic parameters of that job, that position you're looking to fill, and not be afraid of good people going somewhere else. If someone is, if you had a top tier talent who worked for you for only 6 months, but they did great work every day they were there, we'd all consider that a win. It's a risk, you know, it's a part of life, part of the cycle. We know it's going to happen. Don't be afraid of it. Do it on purpose.
Yeah. Well, Skylar, I think we know NLP is going to be in good hands for at least the next year, probably many years after that. But Brandon, the way that you're thinking about your team, you know, literally philosophically, I'm sure is going to translate really well to help NLP grow. And, you know, there's always the big question, how are you preparing yourself for the responsibility of anybody? We've got a great team of staff within the organization, but there is a lot of demand in your time and it pulls you away from your organization. So how are you preparing yourself for this role?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because NLP staff is remarkable. They've done, any of us who've been around the association for the last, you know, 5+ years have really seen the change, you know, the order of magnitude change that's happened in the staff. So, you know, can't give enough props to Britt and how he leads his team. For, you know, personally, stepping into the president role is really not about me. It's about how I can help, you know, shepherd, pun somewhat intended, a board into the best decision for the association. When you're a board member, it's often more about your individual contribution on a particular issue. I want to weigh in. I want to challenge orthodoxy. I want to maybe not have my way, but try and move and advance the discussion in some way, shape, or form, right? That's part of my role as a member of a board of directors. When you step into that executive role of being the president, it's no longer about the individual, because if you're talking over or muscling your position in, the dynamic is likely to chill board participation. So it's about being, again, the shepherd of the dialogue and driving a board towards action in a way that we, you know, we're a volunteer board who only meets a few times in person a year. Our meetings have to be productive. We've got to drive towards action and decision. Even if the decision is no action, we've got to be moving the agenda forward for the board. And so that's really how my role has evolved, is going from being a contributor to more of a facilitator. And it's up to me to live up to it.
And we will all be judging you every single step of the way. No, we're very excited. And you know, again, I think the process is it works. No one's thrown into the fire here. You've got time through committees to councils, to board, to executive leadership, and then you get the chance. And so, you know, the message always goes out. If you're always interested in learning how to participate in a leadership role within NLP, Brandon is, you know, is going to have some wonderful insight this year to share that with you. And certainly the board and all of us are here to help you, because it is just as rewarding as you shared earlier. And you're going to learn a ton through this process.
And as an association, we're blessed by having, to your point, Brett, committees, councils, a raft of really committed, committed professional volunteers. NALP has, I mean, if you look at whether it's, you know, renewal and remembrance, whether it's NCLC, there are individuals who really step in and step up to help push the NALP experience for our members forward. Like, we really are blessed. I've been part of other associations where the committees and, you know, councils really didn't do anything meaningful. And here, whether it's the foundation board or whatever committee, people show up to work. So that, like, it's a beautiful thing.
All right. Well, we've made it to that part of the segment where we get to hear about all the things that are beautiful and the things that are maybe a little painful. Rose and thorn. I'm going to kick it off with Skylar. What has been going well for you? What has been just maybe a little thorny?
Yeah, I'd like to share. I was just thinking about that earlier today. I'll start with the thorn and then we'll end with something pretty, as you said.
Good move.
So I I took, these are both kind of personal things that don't have to do with work, but I took my car in for oil change and regular maintenance, and in doing so found out, and I hadn't looked for a while, so found out that I need some tires. And I also found out that these tires are expensive. They are run flat, low profile, sporty tires on my car. And so that was a little bit of a thorn that I wasn't quite expecting on that. The Rose is, I've been having some fun being creative in a new area for me that I have never delved in before. And that's in, I'm helping a friend. She is starting a new physical therapy business and helping her set up her website. And I've never done a website before. And so it's been really fun, Rose, for me to not only to help and serve her in a time of need for her personally, but also learn some new creative skills in some website design. So those are my Rose and Thorn, Brett.
All right. Well, we're going to be having a website podcast here soon enough about what the 101 level stuff, but we're going to do it. That's sweet. Brandon, how about you?
You know, I would be remiss to say my sister just got engaged. So she's getting married fall of 2024. So that's hard not to call that a rose. I'm a big fan of her, fiance. So that's certainly a positive. These thorns, I try not to spend a whole lot of time dwelling on them. This is both a bit of a rose, thorn, shameless plug, but a week after next, we're hosting a field trip for the EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs and Fish and Wildlife Service out at my house in the Shenandoah Valley. So there's the manic crazy of getting ready to host. We got porta potties, tents, whole group of NELP members descending so we can spend a day showing EPA and Fish and Wildlife Service regulators how we do the work we do and take their label instructions and put them into practice.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. Yep. That'll feel more rose-ish after or during, but prior to.
I'm confident that will emerge into a rose, but right now on the front end of trying to prepare for, 40 EPA scientists to be trapezing around the house is a little bit of a stressor.
I'll share my rose as I just came off of a 2-day music festival this past weekend where Woodstock was in Bethel Woods, New York, just beautiful country. Nice. Pretty cool with the history of just seeing where Woodstock was and a great time for a concert. I'm not sure I am into that was an RV, but like camping, get it up, concert going, repeat. I mean, again, a blast, but, you still need that day to rest. But really just beautiful weekend. With friends and my wife, and we just had a blast. No kids, just great party. Thorn, I'll be starting to say this one a little more often. Snow is coming. We're not far out. Are we as prepared as we should be? No, not particularly. And we've got to kick some butt there because it isn't going to wait. Everyone's starting to hedge already that it's going to be snowier than last year and not as icy as it was. And so I'm going to hear all the farmer's almanac crap that's going to come out of these next couple of weeks. But that one of these days I'm responsible for coming on this podcast saying, no, snow, I'm excited about it. The whole year. We're ready. And this isn't going to be that year, unfortunately, but we're going to get it. So it's a little bit of all that piece there. Well, Brandon, thank you. Some really good insight. We wish you all the best for the coming year ahead, and we'll see you certainly in person at Elevate, and you'll be on this big stage, and just we'll be cheering for you.
Thanks, man. I do appreciate it.
And Skylar, this is working great. I'm glad you're here. You already brought research. You brought good note. I mean, you're just nailing this thing.
Well, thanks, Brandon, for your time. I'm sure the listeners will agree. We can feel your energy and enthusiasm, as Brett said, and optimism about our industry and our profession. And that's contagious. So thanks for bringing that.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And if anyone who's listening is going to be at Elevate and wants to hear more about kind of our operational culture on the JT Price and John Lucci are doing a panel talk on employee incentives at work. And so John is one of our executive managers in our operations. So be a little bit more, probably is the one most responsible for scaling our culture.
Yeah.
Very good.
Shameless plug.
Boom. No, they're going to, this point to Elevate, there are going to be a lot of shameless plugs because this is, is probably a highlight of our year from an education and connection point. So y'all better be there. It's time to go.
If you haven't registered, do it. Registrations are way up from last year. I know the block at there are four over hotels, but the main block is full. Get on it if you're going, because the content will be there.
That's right. I may be willing to share my room for the right price. So I'm just saying that if it gets there.
It's a month with me, Red.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. You do have the bigger room. I'm certain of it. So we're going to be fine there. All right. Well, thank you.
There was a president flashback right there.
That's it.
Like, whoa.
To our listeners, thank you to share the good news, share this with others. We look forward to the next few. And everyone have a great week. Thank you all.